Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KALW's weekly performing arts radio magazine. I'm your host, David Latulip. This week, Susan McMain, Artistic and Executive Director of the Young Women's Choral Project, will share details about the upcoming holiday concerts, Stars of Wonder. I'll also have a conversation with the legendary songwriter Burt Bacharach, who's in town to perform with the San Francisco Symphony next week. Music director Tracy Chapone discusses the upcoming production of Irving Berlin's White Christmas at Hill Barn Theater in Foster City. Plus, flutist and vibraphone player Roger Glenn shares some details about his upcoming collaboration at Yoshi's in Oakland. Who knows, you might even get a live performance out of it. Plus, critic Joshua Cosman offers his classical music picks for the busy month of December. Stay with us. That's the sound of the Young Women's Choral Project. The Young Women's Chorus sings a solo concert of exquisite holiday music featuring works by Hildegard von Bingen, Johann Sebastian Bach, Felix Mendelssohn, and others, including traditional carols of the season, next Saturday at First Congregational Church in Berkeley, Stars of Wonder No. 1. It's followed the next day here in San Francisco by Stars of Wonder No. 2, which will feature the full complement of Young Women's Choral Project's ensembles and will include music by Mendelssohn, John Rutter, and others, and some more familiar carols of the season. Here to talk about the Young Women's Choral Projects is the artistic and founding director of the organization, truly a world-renowned choral conductor, Dr. Susan McMain. Susan was the artistic director of the San Francisco Girls Chorus, where she achieved national and international acclaim for its concert, recording, and touring chorus. She has also served on college music faculties of St. Louis University, University of North Dakota, and San Francisco State, and was founding artistic director and conductor of the St. Louis Women's Chorale. In addition to many grants and accolades, she shares the Grammy spotlight for three of the recordings made with the San Francisco Girls Chorus in collaborations with Michael Tilson Thomas and the San Francisco Symphony. Susan, so happy to have you on Open Air.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, would you give us a brief overview of the Young Women's Choral Project and its mission?
Yes, it's been in existence since 2012. We're in our third season. Our mission is to transform young women's lives through excellence in choral artistry. And right now we have two training choirs and then the premier ensemble that you just heard.
So how is the different choruses organized? How many ensembles are involved?
There are three ensembles. We think of it as beginning, prelude choir, where you can enter without any prior music knowledge, and then an intermediate division called Allegro Chorus, and then the Premier Chorus that I conduct. Our two training choirs, Prelude and Allegro, have a Kodai music education based. They are teaching them solfege and music reading, good vocal technique, and repertoire and performance skills.
How is the pool of young women singers here in San Francisco? It seems to be robust, I would say.
It is. Well, you know, we reach all the way out into the East Bay and down in the South Bay and up. I have a girl coming from Petaluma and as far south as San Jose to rehearsals. So, I mean, we really reach out a long way, and it's twice a week, so I think, you know, you have to be dedicated to really learning, but they really do learn a lot, and they are, you know, by the time they've come through our program, and even just in 2 years, I've seen just great growth in this organization.
In terms of resources, where are you finding the girls? Are they primarily from the public schools here in San Francisco, private schools? Do you find that the public schools are doing an adequate job of music education these days?
Well, since we are music educators, we think we can train anyone, doesn't matter. I mean, they can come in with no knowledge, and so that's fine. We wanted to be a diverse socioeconomic group, and so we are going into the schools. I do workshops in San Francisco Unified District, trying to find girls that are interested in learning more about singing and about themselves through music.
Mm-hmm. So what would an audition process be like for a young girl?
Oh, for the youngest, we're just looking for enthusiasm and, you know, we try to help them. If they can't match pitch, we try to help them during the audition to see, you know, what their voices sound like and just see if they're enthusiastic about even singing Happy Birthday or My Country Tis of Thee. We ask them to sing a song they know and see what they do. And we really just want enthusiasm at the very the lower level. And then to get into Allegro, they do have to have some music reading. But we do get girls that have piano or violin background or some other background and haven't really gotten into choral singing yet. But once they hear us, they really want to do it.
And where are you? You have a regular rehearsal space these days?
We do. It's in. It's at the First Unitarian Church on Franklin and Geary. Nice kind of central part of the city. And they can get from the East Bay, they can get there from BART in one bus. So we feel like a number of our girls come from the East Bay, and the older girls come by themselves.
Well, let's talk now about these holiday concerts coming up on the 13th and the 14th. Stars of Wonder. How'd you come up with that title? I have an idea, but you tell me how that came up.
Yeah, well, I think of the girls themselves as stars of wonder, of course, but also the music. There's lots of music about following stars to Bethlehem in the Christian tradition.
Oh, and there's People Magazine as well. Is that maybe the stars?
No, not that kind of star. But we do have, we're doing one piece called Northern Lights by a Latvian composer, Eriks Eschenvalds, that includes a description of what the aurora borealis looks like from a ship up in the Arctic.
Hmm. And how did you come across Eric's work?
Through colleagues that performed it at the American Choral Directors Conference. And it was an SATB piece written for mixed choirs, and I noticed that he just recently put it out for treble choir, so I grabbed it and we sang it first in October. It's a great piece because it has tuned water glasses and hand chimes and the girls singing. It's very intricate and just kind of eerie and beautiful.
Is it a challenge teaching young people music apart from the Western canon, apart more contemporary music, or do they have a different ear than what you and I perhaps grew up on?
They definitely have a different ear. They are not afraid of dissonance they can sing anything, really. I'm just amazed if you go about it and say, this is just a cool chord, and they just do it, you know. They don't worry about what, you know, I couldn't even sing a minor second when I was their age, but they just hold the parts and just do beautifully.
So these are weekly rehearsals. Are the rehearsals correspond to a school calendar then? Or?
It's a school calendar. You know, we've organized this older choir, my girls that are from 7th grade through 12th grade, with no afternoons. We have one evening, a Wednesday evening rehearsal, and a one Sunday afternoon rehearsal, but no weekday afternoon. So after school, they can possibly play a sport or be in a theater production or something else, go home and do homework or just hang out. So we have a different schedule that works around their lives, we hope.
And how long has this particular Stars of Wonder concert been in preparation?
Well, not too long. We just started this fall. We have, you know, the holiday favorite songs as well, you know, besides some contemporary things like this Latvian piece I was talking about. And since we're going to Germany, we're doing some J.S. Bach, Hildegard von Bingen, and also a Josef Reingold piece. Reinberger piece that were written for women's choirs. way back.
Mm-hmm. And so once again, the Stars of Wonder number one is the premier chorus, the Young Women's Chorus, on Saturday in Berkeley. And then Sunday's the whole larger group. What sizes are we talking about for the Saturday versus the Sunday concert?
Yeah, we have 40 girls in my premier chorus, and there'll be about 85 counting the younger groups. And we sing together some, and then they'll each have a chance to sing by themselves.
Wonderful. What's happening after these gala concerts? Spring concerts are planned?
Oh, yeah. It's March 1st. We're singing with Morris Smiley in Voco. She's a world music singer and is a fantastic performer on March 1st. And then we will also be doing concerts in the spring in May, May 31st, but also a send-off concert for our Germany tour.
Very nice. Well, we'll look forward to hearing you back maybe to talk about those
concerts. That'd be great. Thank you.
Dr. Susan McCabe is leading the Young Women's Choral Projects here in San Francisco. Stars of Wonder number one is on Saturday, December 13th at 8 o'clock in Berkeley. Number two here in San Francisco at Calvary Presbyterian Church on Sunday the 14th at 4 p.m. More information at their website, ywcp.org. Susan, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you so much.
Choral Projects of San Francisco singing Bright Morning Stars Arising, a traditional Kentucky folk song arrangement. Again, ywcp.org for more information. Still to come this hour of Open Air, Joshua Cosman will be offering his December classical picks for the month of December, a busy month it is. I'll be talking with Burt Bacharach by telephone, an interview I conducted last week. He has some fascinating things to say about his upcoming San Francisco Symphony performances next week. And by the way, Promises, Promises is his own work with Hal David that's playing at SF Playhouse now through early January. And next, well, I don't think anything speaks of the holiday season quite like White Christmas, an Oscar-winning song of Irving Berlin's from 1942. The movie Holiday Inn introduced us to that tune, a film that was later repackaged as White Christmas. The Hill Barn Theater presents the stage version of that Tony Award-nominated musical, White Christmas, now through the 21st of December. It's directed by Virginia Musante and musically directed by my guest, Tracy Ciappone. Originally from Lafayette, California, Tracy trained in music at USC and spent several years in L.A. on the classical music front. She includes a 6-year run with Beach Blanket Babylon on her resume and was an understudy for Patti LuPone for a piece by local boy made good, Jake Heggie. She was last seen on the Hill Barn stage as Mrs. Bryce in Funny Girl and as the Lady of the Lake in Spamalot. Though this is her first foray into music directing for adults, she has for the past 8 years vocally directed the spring musical at Borrell Middle School. Tracy also sang the national anthem at a Giants game against the Arizona Diamondbacks back in September. Tracy, welcome to KALW.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
So did the Giants win that game?
Yes.
Oh, good. Maybe they'll have you back then.
You know what? I am totally responsible for them winning the series, I'm convinced.
Well, tell us a little bit about the differences between White Christmas, the movie, and White Christmas, the musical.
You know, they're actually pretty close. There are a couple of numbers that are in the movie that are not in the stage show. One of them that Danny Kaye does called Choreography is a big number in the movie that is not in the stage show. But they're pretty right along. The the train, there's a scene in the stage production where everybody's on the train and they're on their way to Vermont and they sing a song called Snow. And in the movie, it's just the four leads singing it in the dining car. But for the stage show, it's a pretty major ensemble number. The leads are there, but it's staged differently. Mm-hmm. So, but they're pretty, storyline-wise, they're pretty right along.
Well, let's give us that story for those that I can't imagine, but some people may not be
don't
familiar
know the story.
With the storyline of White Christmas.
Okay, so you have these two gentlemen, Wallace and Davis are their names, their last names. That's what they're known as. They're a performing duo who start out in World War II. So they are, the movie starts with them at war and they're doing sort of a, you know, Christmas thing out in the field. Anyway, they come back and they're looking for a sister act to beef up their act. And the sisters of one of the gentlemen that they'd been in the army with, they go and see their act and decide to use them. One of the gentlemen, Phil Davis, falls. He's kind of a ladies' man. And he...
Would that be the Bing Crosby character?
No. Bing is the curmudgeon.
Oh, all right.
Danny Kaye. And you don't really see him as a romantic lead type, but that's really who he is in comparison to the Bing Crosby role. Anyway, he falls for one of the sisters, and they sort of finagle getting the guys to go to Vermont to do a Christmas thing with the girls. The girls are going to Vermont. The boys are supposed to be doing a show over Christmas in Florida. Anyway, so they all end up on the train to Vermont. And turns out that their old general in the war owns this little cabin, you know, bed and breakfast place that they end up at. And turns out that there is no snow. It's 79 degrees in Vermont and you know, so there's nobody there. Anyway, so the boys seeing their general there, knowing that he's having financial issues, they find this out through the sort of busybody lady named Martha who works the front desk. They plan a show and to bring their show to basically a Broadway caliber show, bring the show to Vermont, to the inn. And it kind of goes on from there. So there's, you know, romantic twists and things like that, mm-hmm. you know.
So tell us about your cast. The cast, not your cast. I mean, you're musically directing the cast.
They are my cast. They're wonderful. And, you know, you get, honestly, I mean, when it comes to community theater, you get all kinds. And because you know, a lot of times you really can't pick and choose. And so you get performers who are true professional caliber, and then you get those who are community people who just want to perform and have a good time. And the wonderful thing about it is you get them all together and they all love and respect one another. And yes, some are equity performers and, you know, seemingly people look at them and go, oh, well, they're better than everybody else. But the fact of the matter is everybody's on the same playing field. And it's a fabulous cast. I think our ensemble, they dance their you know what's off, and it's fantastic. And then you've got the four leads who are, you know, they're just, to me, they're professional caliber. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. They're wonderful.
And so 79 degrees in Vermont, does that mean there'll be no stage snow, or does some magic happen on
that front? Oh, there's so much magic. So yes, there will be stage snow.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And all of the tunes from the movie that some of us know so well.
Except for there are a couple. The one called Choreography, and then there's another one that's not. But most of the ones that you know very, very well, they are there.
Very nice. And the show runs through the 21st of December at mm-hmm. the Barn Theater on East Hillsdale Boulevard in Foster City through the 21st. Information at hillbarntheater.org. What's happening after this for you on the musical front, Tracy?
I actually, in January, will start my eighth production with Burrell Middle School. We're doing Shrek. So we will have auditions with the little 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. So I'm switching gears, going back to my babies.
What so, wonderful fun, though.
Yeah,
sure.
they're great.
And they must really enjoy that. Well, I wish you a wonderful run, and I'm sure the fruits of your labor will pay off handsomely for the Hillbarn Theater's production.
I hope so. I think it's a great show.
Let's hear that classic Bing Crosby version of White Christmas. Thanks, Tracy.
You are welcome. Of a white
Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas with every Christmas Christmas card I write. May your day be merry and bright, and may all your Christmases
Dear Bingle singing White Christmas. How can you not get in the mood for this holiday season after hearing that? To get you further in the mood, go see White Christmas, Irving Berlin's classic, the theater production, stage version of that musical at the Hill Barn Theater, hillbarntheater.org. Opens tonight, now through the 21st of December. Speaking of classics...
Raindrops are falling on my head, and just like the guy whose feet are too big for his bed, nothing seems to fit. Those raindrops are falling on my head, they keep falling. So I just did me some talking to the sun, and I said I didn't like the way he got things done. Sleeping on the job, those raindrops are falling on my head, they keep falling. But there's one thing.
An American classic, Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head, from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. That's the unmistakable sound of Burt Bacharach, with lyrics by the late Hal David and Raindrops. The 6-time Grammy, 3-time Academy Award winner, Burt Bacharach will be playing piano, singing, and wielding a baton for 2 nights with the San Francisco Symphony next Wednesday and Thursday, the 10th and 11th. Kansas City born, Queens, New York raised, Bacharach is best known for his popular hit songs and compositions from the late 50s through the 80s, many with lyrics written by Hal David. The list of their hits together include the tune we just heard, This Guy's in Love with You, I'll Never Fall in Love Again, Do You Know the Way to San Jose, Walk on By, What's It All About, Alfie, What the World Needs Now in Love, I Say a Little Prayer, One Less Bell to Answer, many of which were written with the distinctive voice of Dionne Warwick in mind, resulting in one of the most fruitful collaborations in pop music history. Over a 20-year period, Warwick charted 38 singles, co-written or produced by Bacharach and David, including 22 top 40, 12 top 10, top 20, and 9 top 10 hits on the American Billboard charts. The team of Bacharach and David also wrote hits for The Carpenters, Dusty Springfield, Gene Pitney, Tom Jones, and others. Their film work includes the Oscar-nominated title songs for What's New Pussycat and Alfie, The Look of Love from Casino Royale, and the aforementioned Oscar-winning Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. David and Bacharach were awarded the 2011 Gershwin Prize for Popular Song, bestowed by the Library of Congress, the first time a songwriting team was given the honor. And it is indeed an honor and a pleasure to talk with the song master, not here in the studio, but by phone from his home in Pacific Palisades, still going strong at 86. It was indeed a pleasure to talk with Burt Bacharach. Well, you were a part of my childhood growing up. I'm 51 now, and your Reach Out album was part of my parents' collection in Connecticut, and that was well worn by me when I was growing up. So thank you so much for that.
You are very welcome.
I was delighted to learn that your early composition teachers included favorites of mine, Henry Cowell, Bohuslav Martinu, and Darius Milhaud. That's quite an array itself. Where did you first encounter Henry Cowell?
He was teaching at the New School in New York, and I had just gotten out of the Army, and I wasn't sure what I wanted. I wanted to maybe stay in Paris after I was discharged and study over there, maybe with Honegger, perhaps, and live in Paris, but the pull of coming home and not being that really absolute sure and serious that I was going to follow the classical path, you know. I have no regrets the path that I took, you know, but at one time I was very involved with the music scene in New York with Henry Cowell and John Cage and Lou Harris and people like that. It was a very interesting aspect, and even studying with Darius Milhaud, I was able to get a real strong message from him, which was probably the strongest message I could have gotten from any teacher or any human being who I held in high esteem. And I'd written a sonatina for the summer chorus, and it was for violin, piano, oboe. And the middle movement, the second movement, was a very, very melodic and made me filled with sort of discomfort to even play it for the class. There were five of us in the composition class. And because of the melody was right there, and it was, and I was a bit ashamed of it. And, you know, the rest of the class, we were fooling in 12-tone music and listening to Alban Berg and Webern, and, you know, so there was a certain extremism in the class and dissonant avant-garde. And I played it on the piano how it would be without having the violin and the oboe playing it, but just demonstrating it from the piano. And I think Milo felt my discomfort and said the most important thing he could say, and he felt it. I never said apologized it for anything like that, but he said, never be ashamed of something that people can remember, something that's melodic, something that you can go and retain in your head. And that's pretty powerful.
I should say, yeah. Was it from Boleslav Martinu then you got some more of your jagged rhythmic ideas, perhaps?
No, I don't think so. I think to come up with jagged rhythm ideas was never intentional. It was just a natural flow. I mean, what it was my composite of learning pool, influence pool, well, you got to say Dizzy Gillespie, Thelonious Monk, Charlie Parker. As I said, never intentional. It's just the way I heard it. I never set out to, let me make it real complicated for the musicians. Never, that was my intent. Then to take it into a studio, and those musicians hadn't seen a 7/8 bar. When, instead of counting, they felt it, they felt the naturalness of it, and that's all I asked, you know, and that's what I knew would happen. So, I have no regrets about making things a little difficult. Certainly, in cases, accessibility is always the most important thing. Write something that is accessible and doesn't wear people out. Mm. They want to maybe hear it the second week instead of 3 days and they've heard it too much, you know? And then if you look at things like Promises, Promises, the musical that Hal and I did with Neil Simon, the title song, Promises, Promises, I'm all through with promises. There are a lot of words, and there are a lot of notes. And when Jerry Orbach played the lead in the original production, and Jerry, I'd say after 2 months, I'd come back from California to see how the show was going. He said, do you have to make it so hard? Did you have to write so many notes and so many words? And, you know, I said, Jerry, I don't mean to make it hard on you, but there is a point dramatically. This guy has really had it with his bosses and his job and his life and promises that have been made to him. So it's got to have that anger and it's got to have that intensity. If you listen to the song, you see there are words that are a lot, and song has a lot of melody.
Right.
And also bar changes. But it was right for the show, and it really expressed Chuck Baxter, who is the lead character, his frustration with his job at that company. And he had to just kind of tell it all like he felt it. And you know, a very difficult song to sing, yet we recorded with Dion when Dion was doing it on stage. It just was fluid and fluent. I mean, because she could float from one note to another note, and it was with consummate ease. So it wasn't a trial. It wasn't that difficult.
Well, having just learned the song myself, I really marvel at the way those mixed meters and rhythms, not to mention intervals, manage to come together so naturally once you have it down.
If it's unnatural, I'm going to hear it's unnatural. If it's okay, if it gets by my ear, let me get away from the keyboard and let me lie down on a sofa in the music room and let me hear it in my head and let me see where anything might be beating up the listener, meaning that exhausting them, making it hard on them, then let me see, maybe there's another way.
Well, let's have a listen to that tune, Promises, Promises, sung by the one and only Dionne Warwick. Then more with Burt Bacharach.
Promises, promises, I'm all through with promises, promises now. I don't know how I got the nerve to walk out. If I shout, remember, I feel free. Now I can look at myself and be proud. I'm laughing out loud. Oh, promises, promises, this is where those promises, promises end. I don't pretend that what was wrong can be right.
Great Dionne Warwick singing Promises, Promises from the musical of the same name. The show, by the way, currently playing at the San Francisco Playhouse, directed by Bill English. Great show, by the way. You can hear my talk with Bill from a couple of weeks ago, archived at kalw.org, in which I did play the Jerry Orbach original Broadway version of the tune then. sfplayhouse.org for upcoming performances through the 10th of January. I'm David LaTulipe, talking with the composer of the musical and many other iconic tunes of Americana circa 1950 to into the 80s and beyond, Burt Bacharach, who is in town with the San Francisco Symphony next week. Now, more of my conversation with him recorded earlier. Well, I'd like to talk about that collaborative process with either Hal David or some of your other collaborators. Is it in the same room collaboration, or is it like, here's some lyrics, show me what you got in a day or two, or are you in the same room working out things?
Hal and I never finished a song in one day. I mean, you know, he'd go back to Roslyn on Long Island. I'd go back to my apartment on East 61st Street, and I'd work a little bit. We'd meet the next day, and I mean, I do believe if you're going to make a song, you don't have much time to make it really good. It's a short form. It's a 3.5-minute piece that you're dealing with. And you got to make everything count. If you're good and flexible, you can write with anybody, David.
You're pretty hard on your collaborators as well. Some 30 takes on some of the tunes with Dionne, that many probably for Alfie at Abbey Road and Cilla Black.
Oh, yeah, if you ever watch a video on that, I mean, she looks like she's ready to kill me, you know. But I do have this thing. If I'm doing something live, and I got the orchestra there and the singer, and we're all trying to do it at the same time, not punching in, not doing overdubs, anything like that, not doing the rhythm section first and then adding the strings on another date, but let's put it all together and do it like a... And now all I'm doing, really, I'm never going to get 100%, David, but I'm going to go as close to it as I can get. It's trying to get as much music in when I come up to San Francisco to play for this wonderful audience, wonderful orchestra. I cannot say enough about this orchestra.
Well, we're looking forward to hearing the special Bacharach magic that he'll be bringing next week to San Francisco.
Look forward to being there, as always. Thank you, David.
Let's go out with another Bacharach David Warwick collaboration. A classic, here's what I consider uber Bacharach David, A House Is Not a Home. Words by Hal David, music by Burt Bacharach, sung once again by the inimitable Dionne Warwick.
A chair is still a chair, even when there's no one sitting there. But a chair is not a house, and a house is not a home when there's no one there to hold you tight, and no one there you can kiss goodnight. A room is still a room, even when there's nothing there but gloom. Don't let one mistake keep us apart.
Is Not a Home. Music by Burt Bacharach. Words by Hal David. Burt Bacharach in town next week, the 10th and 11th, with the San Francisco Symphony, sfsymphony.org. Well, let's change the pace a little bit, and then we'll be talking with Joshua Cosman shortly. Stay with us. This is Open Air on KALW. A little touch of Energizer, heard on the soon-to-be-released Latin jazz CD In the Moment by Roger Glenn, heard there on vibraphone. He and violinist Mads Tolling will be on the bill with the John Santos Sextet for two sets at Yoshi's in Oakland tomorrow evening. John Santos, one of the most foremost band leaders, composers, producers, percussionists, and educators in jazz and Afro-Latin music. He's a multi-Grammy nominee, the 2012 San Francisco Latino Heritage Arts Award winner, and SF Jazz's resident artistic director. My good friend Roger Glenn is really an amazing role model for me. He's a master flute and vibraphone player who also plays sax, clarinet, oboe, many Latin hand percussion instruments. New York City native, Roger got his start listening to his father, Tyree Glenn, play trombone and vibraphone with Cab Calloway, Duke Ellington, and Louis Armstrong, among others, sounds that helped him cultivate his own unique sound. Roger has performed with such giants of jazz and Latin music as Dizzy Gillespie, Mongo Santa Maria, Herbie Mann, Peaches and Herb, Bobby Hutcherson, Mary Lou Williams, and Rosemary Clooney, among many, many others. I'm indeed honored to have you here, Roger.
It's a great pleasure to be here with you, David.
This performance that you'll be doing with the John Santos Sextet will be featuring all original compositions of yours, I understand.
No, not of that. What you were hearing was an original composition, but no, it's going to be very eclectic because myself and also Mads Tolinos are the special guests with him. And so we're doing some standards. He wants me to do some Cal Jader stuff also, since I worked with Cal and on a Grammy Award-winning album we did, La Onda Va Bien. So we're going to be doing that. It's going to be some Latin jazz. It's going to be some jazz. It's going to be all over. It's going to be a very interesting and hopefully successful evening.
Well, having had the great pleasure of hearing you perform in a variety of settings, it's clear that you take such great pleasure in bringing your music to an audience. Now, did that always come naturally, or is that more of the influence of seeing your dad early on?
Oh, of course. Yeah, being around my father and hearing all the great music, working with those people, and also having the opportunity to work with my father—that was like a university education. You know, that was a doctorate. I was working with people. My father had a band with Whit and Kelly. He worked with Miles Davis, Joe Jones, who was Basie's drummer, or George DeVivier, Slam Stewart, who wrote Flatfoot Fluji with the Floy Floy on bass.
Flojoy.
Exactly. So,
What's your earliest memory of hearing your dad?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, hearing him all from birth, practically, you know. I used to watch, when I was growing up, my father was doing, he was a staff musician with CBS in New York, so I'd hear him on the radio as I was going to school, and I'd get back in the afternoon, and my father was doing television, Ted Steele show, Mike Wallace, they had a band together called PM East, PM West that Mike used to do, and Mike played violin before he went into the news, but,
wow.
So I used to see them on television. So hear my father going to school and see my father coming back afterwards on television, and then maybe he might play an evening gig or something like that at the Embers or some East Side Supper Club, in which later on I was able to join him as I grew older.
I was going to ask you, when did you first start playing with him, and what did you play?
With my father, I was playing clarinet, flute, and vibes. Not too much saxophone back then, but when I was working with him, that was, late 60s, early 70s.
Did he encourage that, or was your musical
endeavor? My father let
me
do whatever I wanted to do. You know, like, I'm a pilot. You know, I've been, like, with Civil Air Patrol, auxiliary of the Air Force, for the past 25 years. So I'm a pilot. I, you know, have multi-engine rating, helicopter rating as well. I was a math and physics major in college, contrary to being a music major. But the music always stuck, so that's it.
Well, we're all lucky for that, that's for sure. So tell us a little bit more about what's happening at Yoshi's in these next two sets tomorrow.
Well, we're doing this great concert that John put together, having myself and also Mads Toling playing violin. And, you know, we're going to be doing a lot of jamming with that. We're doing two sets, one at 8 and the other one at 10. And, show a little bit of Mads' style, show a little bit of my style, and show a little bit of John's style with his group. You know, he's had these guys he grew up with, you know, like Dr. John Calloway on flute, Mauricio Magdalucio, Marco Diaz, Saul Sierra. Marco's on piano, Saul Sierra on bass, and David Flores on drums. So they've been working together as a unit for many years. You know, some of them go back to his Batachanga days, I guess.
The shows are at 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock tomorrow, Friday, December 5th, at Yoshi's on Jack London Square in Oakland. Information at yoshis.com. Roger Glenn, what else is coming up on your calendar?
Well, the next day I'm going to be doing a thing also with Jamie Davis, who's a great singer. Used to work with Count Basie. We're doing a thing at playing some jazz at the library in San Ramon. That's with Glenn Pearson, John Shiflett, and Leon Joyce Jr. We're doing a fundraiser for their public library and their jazz collection there. It's a great concert. I've done it before. And coming up later on next year is going to be really interesting. I'm going to be on tour with Taj Mahal.
Fantastic.
Playing with Taj.
Have you played with them before?
We played together many years ago. We did an outdoor concert together. It was a double bill, and then we ended up jamming together. But doing that with Taj, and also later on, great vocalist Kurt Elling, who's a great one jazz vocalist. So doing that, and my own group, the Roger Glenn Latin Jazz Ensemble. So it's filling up.
I should say.
And also, I should forget, before I forget, I'm also doing on March 15th, I don't have the venue yet, but it's going to be nationwide with other Vibus. March 15th, I call it Beware the Vibes of March.
Nice, nice.
I'm going to have, like last year, I had 5 vibe players playing, so it's going to be a happening.
Very nice. And, of course, this new CD coming out in the moment.
Great,
music
for
by
sure.
Original compositions of Roger Glenn. Well, God help me, Roger. I suggested that maybe we do some live music together here on KALW.
Well, you said I would do some live music. And so I said, okay, if I'm going to do it, you're going to do it, David. So I brought 2 flutes.
Oh, wow. I was hoping, and I left mine at home just saying, well, you know,
I knew
shoot,
that.
I forgot.
Yeah, right.
All right, so we're gonna attempt a little holiday music enhanced by electronics to make us sound like we're on the stage at Carnegie Hall. Let's see what happens.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
That works pretty well, I think.
That was me. That wasn't David.
Ready? Here we go.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, go.
Roger Glenn. That was great fun.
We're out of here, folks.
Well, if there's anyone with us still, we're going to be talking next with Joshua Cosman, who's going to talk about things ahead in the world of classical music. Thanks again for coming in, Roger. Have a great set at Yoshi's. Well, it is the beginning of December, a jam-packed month that you've already heard just in this hour of open air. Joshua Cosman now joining me in studio to talk about classical front.
I can't believe you think I'm going to follow that.
Well, we got to get the long hair stuff in here, too, you know.
Well, that was terrific. Thanks for that. December is, as you say, it's Christmas time, it's holiday time. We're going to get to that in a minute. But first I want to just mention a new project that the San Francisco Symphony is unveiling this month in a new a performance space right behind Davies Hall. It's an old rehearsal studio. It's very bare, but they've fixed it up. An electronic setup from the Meyer Sound Studios over in the East Bay. And they're going to start a new concert program called Soundbox, which is going to be a kind of a freeform nightclubby kind of thing with a range of kind of music that they can't do in the ordinary symphony concert hall, not orchestral music.
With a range of acoustics.
Exactly so. So they're going to get a whole different side of the musical life that goes apart from the ordinary orchestral fare.
And that's courtesy of, I don't know about this, courtesy of, but it's John Meyer Sound that's providing these different acoustic environments.
Exactly,
right?
So.
Depending on the ensemble.
So the opening program is this Saturday, not this coming Saturday, but the following, the 13th of December. Michael Tilson Thomas is going to be the initial curator, and he's going to have his usual range of music, everything from Monteverdi to Edgar Varèse to Steve Reich and Meredith Monk and so forth. And I think he's going to talk a bunch and guide us through all that music. It's a very casual setting, at 9 o'clock curtain time, which is not that usual for the San Francisco Symphony, and drinks and open seating and all kinds of good stuff. So trying to shake up the concert format.
The 9 o'clock time makes up the drinks makes up for the 9 o'clock concert time.
It all works together. It all works hand in glove together. So the opening concert, as I say, this is going to be MTT in charge, and then later down the road there will be other programs curated by such folks as Samuel Adams, and Nathaniel Stuckey and Edwin Outwater. There's going to be one that's devoted to the percussionists of the symphony, and a chance for them to kind of do some music that they don't ordinarily do in the regular round of orchestral music. So information on that is, it's not at the symphony website. I found this out the hard way. This concert series has its own website, which is sfsoundbox.com. sfsoundbox.com. It's got all kinds of bells and whistles and colorful flu-flow. More new music is coming this weekend, which is a very exciting new project from Paul Drescher and Amy X. Newberg. Paul Drescher, of course, the composer and guitarist and the head of the Paul Drescher Electroacoustic Band. And Amy X. Newberg, who is a wonderful composer and singer and performer of various kinds of stuff, they have put together a project called They Will Have Been So Beautiful, which they commissioned songs inspired by the photography of Diane Arbus from a whole range of composers from around the Bay Area and elsewhere. These are some of the really most exciting composers in the area, including Lisa Bielowa, Jay Cloyte, Conrad Cummings, Fred Frith, Carla Kilstedt, and others. Pamela Z is on that list. There's going to be two shows this weekend, Friday and Saturday nights, at Zellerbach Playhouse, presented by Cal Performances. And these are all new works, as I say.
Ten works created by the special thing, They Will Have Been So Beautiful, songs and images of now.
Yeah, inspired by the photography of Diane Arbus.
We actually have a brief excerpt from Amy Newberg's work, which I love the title of it. It's called, Is It Conflict-Free and Were Any Animals Harmed in the Making of It? We have an excerpt now from Amy X. Newberg.
The soft touch, the stupid joke, the paying of the bills. Then she woke up Monday morning and began another week. And though she tried to tread carefully, her wet feet kept picking up little pieces of shrapnel still lying on the ground. And she wondered, 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 didn't I just sweep this or did I merely spread around?
Music of Amy X. Newberg, not the one that's going to be performed this weekend with Cal Performances, but that was an excerpt from Shrapnel. But we've had her on before. We've had Paul on, Paul Drescher as well. It's going to be really something to catch that. Josh.
Also this weekend, on Sunday, we have the pianist Garrick Olson in the first of two recitals that he's devoting to the music of Scriabin, which is a composer who is still not sufficiently well known and understood, I think, by many listeners, and benefits from this kind of full-on attention. You know, running through the early sonatas on this Sunday's performance at the SF Jazz Center. It's going to do early sonatas, some of the etudes and preludes, and then in March there'll be a follow-up event with a full evening of Scriabin's piano sonatas, which some are very straightforward, some are very weird and take a lot of getting used to. Olson, I think, is someone who can really do that and make the case for that music very well. That's presented by San Francisco Performances. Information is at sfperformances.org.
Also, pleased to know that he's going to be doing those Scriabins again this coming March at the SF Jazz Center.
Okay, and finally, in the seasonal vein, we have a bunch of local organizations presenting seasonal music, Christmas music of various kinds. Philharmonia Baroque has already opened. They opened their program last night in Palo Alto with a program of Christmas music by Jan Dismas Zelenka, the great Czech composer, was a colleague and a contemporary of J.S. Bach's, and music by Vivaldi, a little Haydn. I was at the performance last night, and it's shaping up very nicely, especially with the contributions of the soprano Dominique Labelle. That's going to be repeated Friday and Calvary Presbyterian here in San Francisco, and then over the weekend, Saturday and Sunday nights, at First Congregational Church in Berkeley. Other Christmas music that's coming our way, the New Century Chamber Orchestra. Nadia Salerno-Sonnenberg, who's the artistic director, has made a particular point of trying to get collaborations going between her orchestra and other local performers. So this is going to be a collaborative effort between the New Century Chamber Orchestra and the San Francisco Girls Chorus. It's a program of Christmas music of various sorts, music by Handel, music by Corelli, Vaughan Williams, other folks, and that's going to run several times between the 18th and the 21st of December in Berkeley, Palo Alto, San Francisco, and San Rafael. The Magnificat Baroque, which is Warren Stewart's great early music ensemble devoted to 17th century music, is going to be doing the Christmas Mass of Cavalli, the great Italian composer of the 17th century. That's December 19th through 21st in Palo Alto, Berkeley, and San Francisco. And, as always, Messiah. Can't have Christmas without Messiah. This year, Jane Glover, the great English conductor, is coming back to conduct the San Francisco Symphony in performances of that piece. That'll be December 18th through 20th in Davies Symphony Hall.
How do you get through a December, Joshua?
I take a lot of meds.
good for you. Well, we'll hear a little bit of Messiah as we say goodbye to you. Thank you once again. Rest up, if you can, for the next year ahead. We'll have you on the beginning
of our
feature first Thursdays of the month, Joshua Cosma. Thanks so much, Joshua.
Thanks, David.
Other things that are coming up, just so much going on here in San Francisco. It's going to be a wonderful holiday season. Thanks, as always, to my producer, Niels Swinkels, for herding cats, getting things in and out, all of our calendar scheduling. A reminder that our shows are archived at our website, kalw.org. Just click on the Open Air tab. Let's enjoy some music of Handel from The Messiah. Again, Jane Glover conducting SFS Messiah. An excerpt from the English Concert and Choir Trevor Pinnock's version of The Messiah, San Francisco Symphony Messiah with Jane Glover conducting, will be heard from the 18th to the 20th of December here in Davies Symphony Hall. Information at sfsymphony.org. I'm David LaTulipe. Thanks once again for listening to Open Air, your weekly performing arts magazine. Join me next week. An hour of news from the BBC in London is next for the BBC NewsHour. It was recorded an hour earlier for broadcast at this time. It's 2 o'clock.